Live the tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Steve Kathan. Florida's Highway Patrol reports two deaths in storm-related crashes as Hurricane Idalia blasts away. With winds still topping 100 miles an hour and a storm surge that has caused flooding, CBS's Christian Benavides.
So far it's holding, but the water just keeps coming.
Idalia's powerful and in some places record-breaking storm surge is submerging parts of Florida's Gulf Coast. Homes and streets in Cedar Key are now underwater from a surge forecasters say could hit 16 feet high. At least 230,000 homes lost power.
Well, Tampa missed the worst of it, but Mayor Jane Castor says
there is a lot of water, and unfortunately, there's no time for that to recede before we get the king tide in a few hours. So we are looking at additional flooding here in our area.
I'm Jim Crisul in Darlington, South Carolina. Clouds are lowering and darkening as Idalia moves across the southeast. Heavy rain will fall, prompting flood watches for areas east of I-95. There will be a tornado threat, and tropical storm warnings are posted for the coast of Georgia and the Carolinas.
There's word a Washington judge has ordered a default judgment in favor of two Georgia election workers in their defamation case against Rudy Giuliani for his statements after the 2020 election. Bad turbulence left 11 people needing hospital treatment on a Delta flight from Milan, Italy, that landed safely last night in Atlanta. Well, CBS's Cammie McCormick has more on what's being said in the wake of the plane crash that killed Russian mercenary leader Yevgeny Prigozhin.
The Kremlin now says the investigation will include the possibility that the crash was caused deliberately, but it cautioned the investigation is not finished. The plane came down on a flight from Moscow to St. Petersburg, and U.S. officials believe a bomb was likely on board. Villagers on the ground said they heard a loud bang before the jet plunged to earth, exactly 2 months after Yevgeny Prigozhin staged an ill-fated mutiny on Moscow.
The White House says Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un have swapped letters as Russia looks to North Korea for weapons for use in the Ukraine war. On the Health Watch, CBS's Vicki Barker with the latest on heart attacks and aspirin.
A seven-year, 51-country study found fewer than 40% of people who've suffered a heart attack or stroke take a daily aspirin, even though it can help prevent another cardiac event. The take-up ranged from about 17% in low-income countries to about 65% in high-income countries like the U.S.
The Dow is up 35. This is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Embarrassed?
Find out what's going on in the world, the state, and in your own backyard. This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 12:03. Good afternoon. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Republican state lawmakers are considering impeaching Wisconsin's newest Supreme Court justice. Pete Schwabe has more.
Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he might launch impeachment proceedings against Janet Protasiewicz if she doesn't recuse herself from lawsuits challenging Wisconsin's legislative maps. Protasiewicz called the maps rigged during her election campaign. She isn't saying if she'll recuse herself. Democrats say Republicans are trying to flout the will of the voters who elected the liberal justice in a landslide. Meanwhile, emails obtained by WisPolitics reveal tense exchanges between conservative Chief Justice Annette Ziegler and the new liberal majority. Pete Schwabe, Civic Media News.
A proposed income tax cut in Wisconsin is moving through the process. Republicans want to cut income taxes by almost $3 billion. Representative David Steffen tells the Assembly Ways and Means Committee today it's the best use of the state's large budget surplus.
Whatever their need, whatever their want, the best opportunities are provided back to the people who earned it, the people who deserve the refund, and return the surplus in a fashion in which the people of Wisconsin get to choose on how to meet their needs.
Republicans want to eliminate income taxes for retirees. The rest of the cut would go to individuals earning up to $304,000 a year and couples earning as much as $405,000. Governor Evers vetoed a similar tax cut in the state budget. At the time, he said too much of that tax cut would have gone to people who don't need it. The strike at the Leinenkugel's Brewery in Chippewa Falls is over. Nate Wegehout reports.
Workers at the brewery had been on strike since July 10th. They called for higher wages and a new contract with Leinenkugel's parent company, Molson Coors. Teamsters confirmed that a contract had been signed, but have not yet provided any details. A spokesperson for Molson Coors told WQOW in Eau Claire that they were pleased with the new three-year contract. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
The fate of Wisconsin's elections administrator might lead to changes for all state government appointees. Megan Wolf's case shares similarities with that of Fred Prehn, who stayed on the Natural Resources Board after his term expired because the Senate hadn't confirmed his replacement. Ann Jacobs is a Democrat on the Wisconsin Elections Commission. She says, technically, there is no vacancy.
You got to have a vacancy before you can appoint someone. That is how it is written.
Republican Senator Dan Knodel chaired yesterday's hearing on Wolf's appointment to a second term. He says he's only concerned that the Senate sent Wolf's renomination to his committee.
I will not abdicate my authority or the Senate's authority in this process.
Jacobs urged lawmakers to change the law to make it more clear when appointed terms end. September will be here soon, and so will a host of Wisconsin hunting seasons. Brittany Merlot has more.
On Friday the 1st, you can target early Canadian goose, teal mourning dove, rail, and snipe. Then on Wednesday the 6th, bear season begins. Saturday, September 16th, the northern zone for cottontail rabbit, crow, deer archery, goose, ruffed grouse in Zone A, squirrels, turkey, and youth waterfowl open. By the end of the month, September 23rd, fires off the duck northern zone and woodcock. And by September 30th, hunters can take aim at the ducks in the southern zone. Anyone born on or after January 1st of 1973 must have a hunter education certificate to purchase a hunting license unless hunting under the mentored hunting law. I'm Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he might launch impeachment proceedings against Janet Protasiewicz if she doesn't recuse herself from lawsuits challenging Wisconsin's legislative maps. Protasiewicz called the maps rigged during her election campaign. She isn't saying if she'll recuse herself. Democrats say Republicans are trying to flout the will of the voters who elected the liberal justice in a landslide. Meanwhile, emails obtained by Wiz Politics reveal tense exchanges between conservative Chief Justice Annette Ziegler and the new liberal majority. Xcel Energy has begun installing smart electric meters at homes and businesses in Wisconsin in an effort to build a more efficient energy grid. The first meters will be installed in Alma Center, Coon Valley, Ettrick, Hixton, Melrose, Rockland, and Sparta. The company sets out to install more than 260,000 of the new devices in Xcel Energy's Wisconsin service area this year and through 2025. Two Democratic candidates who fell to United States Representative Derek Van Orden in 2022 have announced they will not run again for the seat in Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. According to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, State Senator Brad Pfaff, who lost the congressional election to Van Orden by 4 points, plans to run for re-election to the state Senate instead. Former CIA officer Deb McGrath, who finished 3rd in the Democratic primary, cited personal reasons for not running again. A Wisconsin Target store had to be evacuated on Tuesday morning after staff members were notified of a bomb threat via email. The New Berlin Police Department responded to the bomb threat around 9:45 a.m. on Tuesday and requested assistance from the Milwaukee Police Department's bomb squad. After a thorough sweep of the area, no bomb was found, and authorities concluded that the incident was a false bomb threat. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Wisconsin weather from Civic Media.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot with a look at your weather ahead. After a crisp and cool overnight, temperatures today will have a hard time rebounding. This will keep highs in the Northwoods and eastern parts of the state into the upper 60s, with some mid-70s along the Mississippi River areas. Sunshine will be abundant as winds continue to blow out of the north, but much calmer today on land. However, Lake Michigan open waters is still allowing a feisty wind to whip up waves to nearly 6 feet high. A beach hazard statement remains in effect until 7 o'clock tonight for Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, and Lake counties. Tonight, we cool down under clear skies once again into the 40s north and 50s south. And by tomorrow, a wind shift to out of the south will begin to surge in the heat from the southern states, bringing 90s back to Wisconsin by Friday and into Labor Day weekend, with another round of potentially record-breaking heat. Have a wonderful Wednesday, Wisconsin. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
The Brewers fall to the Cubs. Good afternoon, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers lost to the Cubs last night by a final score of 1-0. That snapped a 9-game winning streak for Milwaukee. Chicago's Justin Steele struck out 8 batters over 6 innings. The Brewers' Corbin Burns also pitched well and was asked how much was the wind a factor last night at Wrigley Field.
As far as like the wind goes, I mean, you don't really get that many places, but it doesn't really affect how we go out there and pitch. You know, everyone's got to deal with it the same way, so you just got to go out and stick to what you do best, and whatever happens that night happens. And we probably had 3 or 4 balls that were caught on the track right at the wall that probably in a normal day would have been homers, and that's a different baseball game. But yeah, I think we had plenty of opportunities to with guys on base to get some big knocks and just didn't come through, and really they didn't either.
Was it impossible to hit a home run? Willie Adames.
I don't know, but it was tough. It was a tough day, obviously, to hit the ball in the air today. I mean, you know, everybody that have played here, they know when the wind is blowing in, it's almost impossible to hit a homer. But they had the same situation. They only scored 1. We hit the ball hard a couple of times, didn't get the hits, but, you know, that's baseball.
Brewers manager Craig Counsell.
We know that the wind affects the game in this ballpark as much as any park in baseball. So, you know, when you hit the ball in the air, you're not going to be rewarded in this park.
The series wraps up today. 1:20 first pitch, Brandon Woodruff against the Cubs' Kyle Hendricks. NBA, the Bucks have signed guard Ty Washington Jr. He played in 31 games for the Rockets last season. Washington says the Bucks showed him interest over the summer.
The coaches really emphasized the fact that they really want and need me there. And just seeing the way they play, I know if I went there, I'd be able to do what I do.
NFL, the Packers made their initial roster decisions, getting down to 53 players. One of those who made the team was former Houston Texans safety Jonathan Owens.
Just ability to do my job, man, and, you know, do it consistently. That's the thing I would say, you know, because that's all the NFL is, you know, who can do it time and time again, you know. So I've made a few plays in camp, you know what I mean, but I just kind of, you know, my thing is I take pride in doing my job, you know what I mean, so and making the plays that are presented to me. So.
College football, the Badgers season kicks off this Saturday at Camp Randall Stadium, 2:30 against Buffalo. New head coach Luke Fickell, what he's looking for in game one.
Well, I think on both sides of the ball, I want to see how physical can we play. To me, how physical can we play? And that's not just up front. You know, it always starts up front, but I think on the edges and on the perimeter as well. How clean can we play? I mean, it's something new and it's something different. And we've had a lot of opportunities. We had 22 practices already, or 23, and we've had, you know, 15 spring practices. So they've been in these situations, but they also haven't been in them in front of 84,000 and, you know, on national televisions and things like that. So things are a little bit different.
That's the Badgers head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, Big Newton lover of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine, a high near 73. Mostly clear tonight, lows around 53. Sunny with a high near 79 on your Thursday. For Thursday night, partly cloudy, lows around 59. Friday, sunny, breezy, and a high near 87. Winds gust to 30 miles per hour. It's 67 right now.
Welcome one, welcome all. Thanks for joining us today. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with Our Wisconsin Revolution. It is the most official Wednesday of the week. An actual Wednesday, and I am joined by Luke Mathers and Aaron Zommers. Gentlemen, how are we doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well, Will. How about yourself?
It's Wednesday. Does that answer your question?
Sure. Your most favorite of the Wednesdays. The real Wednesday.
It's not my most favorite, Luke. It's my third most favorite.
What
you
claim.
Gotta go in
reverse order. Sure, whatever you say.
But it is the realest Wednesday. I will grant that at least. Aaron, how you doing today?
Yeah, feeling good on a Wednesday.
That's how I'm doing today.
That answers the question.
Ready to go. It was teed up and all set. All set.
Been waiting all day for Wednesday afternoon, right? Today, it's the waiting all day for Monday night joke, Luke.
I understand exactly what the reference was. It was just bad.
You know what, Luke? You're just bad, okay? I don't need to take this from you on a Wednesday, all right? So today we are talking, unfortunately, conspiracy theories at the state level as they do not seem to die. I would like to ask you, the people of Wisconsin, when should Wisconsin move on? At 12:30, we'll be doing some general recombobulating with Dan Schaefer. But before then, Luke, I want to touch on a piece over at the Wisconsin Examiner written up by Harry Redman, Election Conspiracists
Henry.
Testify.
Henry Redman.
Yeah, what did I say?
You said Harry.
That's okay. Apologies. My apologies, Henry.
Well, maybe he's also
election...
Harry.
Election conspiracists testify at disputed confirmation hearing for WEC Administrator. Luke, you touched a little bit yesterday on the show about these what was going on at the Capitol. Would you like to cover the piece a little bit?
Yes, it's something that we shared with everybody. We were keeping an eye on, and Henry does an excellent job writing it up over at the Wisconsin Examiner. The hearing that took place, for those who haven't been following the saga closely, there was a vote by the Wisconsin Elections Commission to renominate an administrator, Megan Wolf, whose four-year term came to an end back in June. And so during that meeting earlier this year, there was a little bit of maneuvering. The Republican-appointed commissioners on that commission have had disdain for the elections administrator in recent years, criticized Megan Wolf and Wisconsin elections officials around the state for the handling of the 2020 election. That's despite an original unanimous decision by the WEC to authorize the policies surrounding absentee ballots, drop boxes, and everything that was needed to conduct an election in the midst of the worst pandemic that the state had seen in a century. And so originally, everything was above par. The Wisconsin Elections Commission signed off on it. There was procedures taken to make sure that Wisconsinites could safely vote in 2020. And then, a pretty important detail, Trump lost the state by more than 20,000 votes. And in that defeat, the former president started looking for mass voter fraud that he could blame and blame the loss on. And absentee ballots became that boogeyman. here in the state of Wisconsin. Well, not just Wisconsin. We saw absentee ballots become the criticism around the state in around the country in several swing states. And so here in Wisconsin, I believe we litigated and looked into the election results of 2020 longer than any other state. The Assembly Republicans authorized a former state Supreme Court justice to go with a blank check to find widespread voter fraud here in Wisconsin. And former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman missed a bunch of filing report deadlines, but did not find anything. But here in the year 2023,
despite $2.5 million spent on
he racked up quite a budget going in and looking for this voter fraud. He went to symposiums in South Dakota or North Dakota, I believe. In Arizona, he went and talked with individuals that were doing the Cyber Ninja audit. Like, there was far-reaching looks outside of the state of Wisconsin to try to find voter fraud in the state of Wisconsin, but it never formulated. And so, till this day, there are still conspiracy theorists now, because it's been litigated, it's been audited, it's been recounted, and no widespread fraud has been found. But still yesterday, the state Senate's Elections Committee held this hearing whether or not to renominate a nomination that didn't go through. Because again, all of that disdain from the three appointees to this commission by Republican officials, despite that disdain, they voted to reappoint Megan Wolf to be another four-year term on the Wisconsin Elections Commission as the administrator. And that's kind of shocking, because if you'd think if they criticized her for the last several years, Will, they wouldn't vote to reappoint her. But they had to do so because you need four votes to renominate to go before the state Senate. Now, here in Wisconsin, the state Senate has been a place where a lot of appointees by Governor Tony Evers, Democratic Governor Tony Evers, have gone to die throughout the first couple months into his second term. But throughout his first term, Evers left several different appointments. He made several hundred different appointments that went not confirmed by the state Senate. There was acting secretaries for departments like the Department of Health Services here in Wisconsin. Throughout a pandemic, we didn't have an actual secretary because the state Senate would not confirm the Evers appointees. And so there's been a lot of different politics being played surrounding this. So in a shocking move, the three Republican commissioners on the Wisconsin Elections Commission voted to renominate Megan Wolf. And so rather than send this nomination to the state Senate, the three Democratic appointments earlier this year voted to abstain. Without four votes, there's not a renomination appointment. But as I mentioned, Will, there is a pretty important precedent that has been set when it comes to these Senate confirmations now. Because from May of 2021 until last year, Frederick Prehn, in concert with lobbyist groups and staff for state senators, decided to hold over on the Natural Resources Board, going all the way before the state's highest court, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and in a precedent set by Prehn v. Call, the Wisconsin Attorney General, the conservative Supreme Court ruled last year that a end date on a term does not create a vacancy. And so now we are in legal limbo here in Wisconsin, because the Supreme Court precedent says that the vacancy is not created just by the end of a term. You have to reappoint, but without the four votes from the Wisconsin Elections Commission to be able to renominate Megan Wolf because of the three abstaining Democratic votes, we're now in this weird limbo. But the state Senate decided that they were still going to take up a reappointment.
Somebody should call Netflix, Luke. This is juicy.
It's a very confusing saga, though. If you're tuning in at different parts and you've missed some and it doesn't all make sense, it's kind of because we have elected officials that want it to not make sense sometimes.
It's purposely convoluted.
It becomes this, well, I'm going to fight for this way because I believe in it now, and I'm going to fight this way. And so there's a lot of different angles that are being played in these politics. But one of the most interesting angles was that Michael Gableman and the conspiracies over the last 3 years now, Will, reappeared in the Wisconsin State Capitol yesterday at this hearing. And so one of the pieces, one of the quotes in the piece by Henry Redman over at the Wisconsin Examiner that I'd like to share. The dispute is likely to be decided in court, yet one of the committee's members, Senator Romaine Quinn, said, quote, it was never our intent to allow the administrator to remain in the seat after the expiration of her four-year term. That's a reversal for the Senate's Republican leadership, which played a major role in establishing the Prenn precedent. Text and emails of the appointee, Fred Prenn, showed that he was in communication with Senate staff as he worked to hold on to power while Republican senators refused to hold a confirmation hearing for his replacement, who had been nominated by Governor Tony Evers for the purpose of keeping him in power. And so now we have elected officials saying, well, that's not our intent, when it was fully the intent for Frederick Prenn to keep a conservative appointee majority on the Natural Resources Board for the better part of the last 2 years.
And you know
what? Go ahead, Aaron.
You know what I have to say about that to these Republicans who are voting for the nomination? You play stupid games, you win stupid prizes.
No, exactly. That's exactly how Romaine Quinn's quote reads to me. Is it was never our intent to allow a liberal supported individual to remain in their seat, because that's different than Fred Prenn, who I personally support. It's do as I say, not as I do. I got to tap the sign again, Luke. Every single day we're tapping the sign. It's the same exact hypocrisy played out over different issues time and time again.
So Will and I have the question. How long are these conspiracy theories around the 2020 election going to last? We want to hear your thoughts. 844-967-2789. Let's head over to the phone lines. We got Ken in Fond du Lac calling in. Ken, what are your thoughts on this Wednesday afternoon?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I was just curious. There was voter fraud in Wisconsin. I was looking at PBS, but there isn't. Let's see here. There wasn't widespread voter fraud.
I believe there were 26 counts of voter fraud out of 3.3 million ballots in the 20. I forget if that was the 2018 or the 2020 numbers. So it's a minuscule amount, and all of those individuals, the roughly two dozen individuals, were charged.
Yes, but what makes it widespread or not widespread? I think that's what needs to be clarified, because they keep saying there was no voter fraud. Yes, there was voter fraud. To what extent? There was not widespread voter fraud, but there still was voter fraud. And how much research did they go into finding how many people did illegal vote, how much time was spent on it in tax dollars? You know, that's the whole clarification. I mean, what is considered widespread and what isn't considered widespread?
I believe the definition of what widespread voter fraud would need to be enough voter fraud that would have affected the margins of the election. So 20,000 votes is what was the rough margin. I believe 21,000, or right around that ballpark, was the margin in the 2020 election. So you would need somewhere around 10,000 votes to be widespread enough to swing that margin, because 10,000 votes one way or the other would affect that. There was nowhere near that. It was 26 individuals, and they were charged. And so I think that is where the definition comes down on, Ken.
Yeah, thanks, Luke. We're going to be right back at 12:30. We're going to be recombobulating with Dan Schaefer. You're not going to want to miss it. We'll see you shortly.
Don't make me tap the sign.
But I'm lost and I need to know where...
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
CBS News Brief.
The water just keeps coming. It's unbelievable.
That man's in Cedar Key, Florida, one of many spots along the state's west coast that's taken a beating from Hurricane Idalia. Storm surges have caused flooding. Winds have knocked out power to hundreds of thousands. Governor Ron DeSantis.
As soon as the storm passes, I think we'll probably end up trying to get on the road and figure out where the damage, the worst damage is, and get down there and see what we can do to be able to help those folks.
Bad turbulence on a flight from Milan, Italy to Atlanta. Reporter Asia Wilson.
11 people were injured, mixture of passengers and crew members. The Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport spokesperson, they said none of the injuries were life-threatening.
A judge has ordered a default judgment in favor of two Georgia election workers in their defamation case against Rudy Giuliani for his statements about them after the 2020 election. CBS News Brief. I'm Steve Kathan.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. A new mural is being painted on a downtown Eau Claire building. According to a WQOW report, the mural is being painted on the family promise of the Chippewa Valley Beacon House this week, with a theme of overcoming adversity and anxiety. Sylvia Hecht, co-creator of the Public Painting Project, says the mural should be done by Thursday, and it won't be the last new mural in Eau Claire this year. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he might launch impeachment proceedings against Janet Protasiewicz if she doesn't recuse herself from lawsuits challenging Wisconsin's legislative maps. Protasiewicz called the maps rigged during her election campaign. She isn't saying if she'll recuse herself. Democrats say Republicans are trying to flout the will of the voters who elected the liberal justice in a landslide. Meanwhile, emails obtained by Wiz Politics reveal tense exchanges between conservative Chief Justice Annette Ziegler and the new liberal majority. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
There is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man.
Milwaukee's best.
It's a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity.
Hey man, what about Milwaukee, man?
It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition.
I think God would want us to go to Milwaukee.
And it lies between the pit of a man's fears and the summit of his knowledge.
What do you think about Milwaukee?
This is the dimension of imagination. You are now entering the recombobulation area.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text at 844-967-2789. We have entered the recombobulation area, joined by Dan Schaefer. Dan, how you doing this Wednesday afternoon?
Doing well. Love the intro. Thanks so much for having me on.
It gets better every week, doesn't it? I still find myself chuckling after the first Bobby quote.
Oh, absolutely. Every time. The Bobby quotes are amazing.
I just want to get a can of Milwaukee's best to then like add to the visual component and be able to share that as well. That's next to do on the list.
Hold it up like Ivanka Trump when she had the Goya beans, right?
Oh, jeez. Exactly. No, see, I was thinking Vanna White, but you're terminally online, and that was your reference for it. So,
dude, meme culture has broken my brain. But before we jump into a little recombobulating, I want to give Luke a little bit of a defense here and answer Ken's question from before the break. According to Wisconsin Watch, election fraud is exceptionally rare. Over the past decade in Wisconsin, it's been prosecuted fewer than 200 times, or about once for every 163,000 ballots cast. So it's kind of playing semantics to say, well, when is it widespread? Because it happens. Sure, it happens minimally. It does not impact the election in any way, shape, or form. And within that tiny universe, the most common reason for criminal charges is not people voting under dead people's names, double voting, or voting impersonation, which were the kinds of crimes election skeptics such as former President Donald Trump claim happen on a large scale. The main cause is voter probation status, according to a Wisconsin Watch analysis of every Wisconsin election fraud case since 2012, with data compiled by Court Data Technologies.
Excellent work. To be able to find that on such short notice, and excellent work by our friends over at Wisconsin Watch. So great job, Will. And then that's the important thing to point out, along with Ken's comments, we did have a texter listening on WMDX Mad Radio 92.7 FM here in Madison, or on the app, which you can download, Civic Media app, wherever your smart device downloads apps. Type in Civic Media. It's free, easy to do, and you can text the show right from the app. You know that it's, I'm going to say nonsense, because this texter is using a little other choice words, but because they never question the results of the races they won, which gets to a point as well, why there's conspiracy theories about the 2020 election, but Republicans aren't really questioning the results of U.S. Senator Ron Johnson being elected to a third term last fall. So yeah, there's definitely something we'll continue to keep an eye on. If you've got thoughts on when Wisconsin will finally get beyond the conspiracy theories from the 2020 election, share them with us here on Town Call, 844-967-2789. But one of the other things that was happening yesterday that we were keeping an eye on, and a subject that, Dan, always seems to pop up when we get to talk with you, is the recurring desire to attract more snowbirds to the state of Wisconsin by the leader of the Republican Party in the state assembly. And so Assembly Speaker Robin Voss yesterday unveiled that Republican lawmakers are going to try to pursue another tax cut after Labor Day. So they kind of teased it a little bit yesterday in Oak Creek, and the Assembly Speaker meeting with a couple of other lawmakers, detailing what this would include. It's about a $2.9 billion tax cut, so about 75% of what's remaining in the state's surplus after the round of budget negotiations that took place earlier this year. But one of the key factors, according to the Assembly Speaker, is we want to get more snowbirds here in Wisconsin. We're going to have retirees have their income tax-free up to $100,000, or if they're filing jointly, $150,000, in order to attract more individuals to live in Wisconsin for 6 months and a day. Dan, your thoughts on the Assembly Speaker's proposal on this latest round of tax cuts?
And Dan, before we jump in, I'd also like to note that the Assembly Speaker was on that 2020 ballot in November, November 3rd of 2020, and that race was not questioned. So let me just toss that one out there to back up your previous point.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on the proposal in general, but just to speak to the issue that Robin Voss continually brings up over and over again as such a main need for the type of tax changes that he's been proposing this year. You know, he keeps talking about wanting to have retirees live here for 6 months and a day. Over and over and over again, he's talking about keeping people from, you know, keeping the property tax income here, keeping the income tax income here. This is not a priority. This is not a good reason to have tax reform in Wisconsin. There's plenty of other reasons where you could put forth, a policy recommendation for making changes to the way retirement income is taxed in Wisconsin. Look, Michigan just passed something making changes to the way that they tax retirement income in their state. Gretchen Whitmer signed it into law, but their version also included, you know, an expansion of the earned income tax credit, a number of other things that could, you know, really address the needs of people in Michigan. This one, the need to attract snowbirds in Wisconsin, which Voss has brought up countless times.
Many times, it's like a running joke.
An unbelievable amount of times that he has brought up the need to attract snowbirds in Wisconsin this year. This is not a priority. This should not be driving.
You weren't hearing that on the ground last Wednesday, Dan? That wasn't what people were talking about outside the debate?
Yeah, I was hanging out in the Deer District, and all I was hearing was people saying, when are we going to attract more snowbirds to Wisconsin? Where is that question going to be on the debate stage tonight? Yeah.
Well, do you believe the Assembly Speaker is maybe just projecting then? Do you think he's got a desire for retirement, and he's just trying to make maybe a couple changes before he seeks it himself? Like, I agree with you that I don't know if this is necessarily a top priority of the state of Wisconsin to be able to bolster the tax income base for the state, having more snowbirds move here. But I have a hard time, I guess, figuring out what the motives are then if it isn't a top priority of the state of Wisconsin. Maybe it's a top priority for the Assembly Speaker.
Maybe it is. There's got to be somebody in his ear driving this issue home, because maybe, I guess maybe it's the only good way to have this type of conversation about, you know, the way that they want to make changes to the tax code. They're not doing a good job attracting young people, working families to the state of Wisconsin, you know, doing things like voting childcare funding out of the state budget at 2:30 in the morning, and ignoring continued calls to fund that program. So many other issues that do impact working families in a very real way. So maybe, I guess, he's finding another way to get at this issue of people leaving Wisconsin. This doesn't seem like a good way to go about it, that's for sure.
Yeah, it does not address the looming problem the state of Wisconsin will be facing at the end of this decade, where we have several think tanks here and research groups in Wisconsin saying the state will be shy 130,000 workers by the end of the decade. Attracting more retirees to the state isn't going to solve the workforce shortage problems that Wisconsin will face currently.
Maybe he's trying to argue to raise the retirement age then. That's his way to get to make sure everybody except for himself loses. We're going to attract a bunch of snowbirds here, then they're actually not going to be able to retire. Sorry. Get back into the workforce.
And one of the other aspects of the proposal introduced by the Assembly Speaker yesterday in southeastern Wisconsin is a general across the board for the third income tax bracket, I believe, is what I read, Dan, which would contribute for anybody making around $30,000, $40,000 a year, all the way up to joint filers up making $400,000 a year. It seems like he's trying to take another swing at this. What are your thoughts on the likelihood this will be received well by Governor Tony Evers and the likeliness it will have to pass into law?
Yeah, I think there is genuinely some room for compromise here. You know, the third tax bracket basically includes the vast majority of all filers in the state of Wisconsin. You know, we heard so much conversation last year or earlier this year about a flat tax. Well, this third bracket essentially amounts to a flat tax in a lot of ways, because it includes people of really across the spectrum of income in the state of Wisconsin. But, you know, I saw some comments from Evers that he was open to some compromise here. And I think there is some room for compromise to get things done because of the fact that Republicans came back with this proposal that doesn't touch the top bracket. And Tony Evers has repeatedly said he's not going to cut taxes for people in that top income bracket. And that's what this would do. Now, it is a little bit poison-pilled the way that Voss has introduced this. One, because it doesn't go to what Evers had proposed in various different negotiations of having a tax cut for everyone making under $100,000. But also it includes, correct me if I get the language wrong on this, but it includes a requirement for any future tax increases to have to pass through a 2/3 vote in the Wisconsin state legislature. So there is this really weird thing that they've tacked onto it, which maybe they're anticipating some changes in, you know, the makeup of the majority in the state legislature under new maps. And maybe they're going to, this is the first of many pushes to make things a two-thirds vote to try to get to a different threshold. You know, that's something I'm certainly watching. I've been hearing people talk about a little bit. But I think overall there is room for some compromise here. And I think that's an encouraging thing.
Wow. Yeah, I see that that is a part of the proposed constitutional amendment contained in the resolution. So that is, I don't necessarily know how that would work, though, as well with the they can try to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot even without the Evers support. So it is something absolutely that will need to be kept an eye on, because if it passes two consecutive sessions of the state legislature, it can go to the ballot before Wisconsin voters and in that regard, circumvent the governor's ability to veto something like that as well. So it is something that, again, they seem to be taking another swing at. Hopefully it's compromise, and hopefully it's not a bunch of smoke and mirrors surrounding a constitutional amendment that would drastically change the state's ability to raise revenue if it needed to. And so it's going to be something to keep an eye on. This is what Republican lawmakers plan to take up after Labor Day. So it should be a pretty busy fall session here in the state of Wisconsin, which is going to be pretty interesting, Dan, because I feel like a lot of years we see the legislative calendar pretty short here in the state of Wisconsin. Maybe not the case here in 2023. We are joined here on Town Call by Dan Schaefer, columnist of the Recombobulation Area. Dan, if individuals are learning to hear more about the breakdowns that you do and all of the work the Recombobulation Area puts out, where can they find out more about your great work?
Well, you can find us on Substack, where we publish the Recombobulation Area, recombobulationarea.substack.com. You can become a free subscriber. The majority of our content is available for free. But if you want to go that extra mile to support our work, help build the local independent publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin, become a paid subscriber. Start at just $5 a month. It's pretty simple.
There we go. And you get all the excellent meme content that Dan shares as well if you follow him on the socials, because excellent Milwaukee content is what comes out of those social profiles as well. Can you believe we had Aaron not know who the Milverine was when we talked about him last week after he threw out the first pitch at American Family Field last week, Tuesday?
I'm not from Milwaukee. Come on.
Milwaukee's homegrown superhero. The great Milverine. I love how weird this city is. It's just incredible.
Now that I do know him, I love him.
There you go. His immediate love, immediate attraction for the Milverine, because, yes, he is a staple of Milwaukee. And if you follow Dan on socials, you can get excellent content like that. We're going to continue the conversation with Dan Schaefer here on Town Call. If you've got thoughts you'd like to share, we want to hear them. 844-967-2789. You're listening to Town Call across Civic Media. We're going to be right back.
Walking in a winter wonderland. Walking in a winter wonderland.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine, a high near 73. Mostly clear tonight, lows around 53. Sunny with a high near 79 on your Thursday. For Thursday night, partly cloudy, lows around 59. Friday, sunny, breezy, and a high near 87. Winds gust to 30 miles per hour. Currently, 69 degrees.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Beneath this snowy mantle, cold and clean, the unborn grass lies waiting for its coat to turn to green. The snowbird sings a song he always sings and speaks to me of flowers that will bloom again in spring.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We're joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. We're talking snowbirds, but we're going to move on a little bit and talk about the 3rd Congressional District in the state of Wisconsin. I was using a piece over from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel noting that Democrats Brad Pfaff and Deb McGrath won't seek to run against Derek Van Orden. Dan, what are your thoughts on the upcoming 3rd Congressional race and what this could mean for that election cycle?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting decision from Brad Pfaff in particular. You know, he ran in this race, ran to flip this seat 2 years ago last year in the 2022 midterms, and came a lot closer than a lot of people expected to defeating Van Orden. You know, the national party, the DCCC, did not put any money into Pfaff's campaign to try to flip this seat. Van Orden has obviously made some headlines this year for screaming at congressional pages or whatever it was. And so, you know, he's going to be in the spotlight as a candidate who could lose. And I think, you know, this opens the door for a number of other candidates, because I think if Pfaff were to run again, people would probably rally around him. He is instead choosing to run for re-election in the state Senate. And I think we might have some really competitive state Senate races next year, depending on what happens with the redistricting cases before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But the Journal Sentinel article that you mentioned also brought up a number of other potential candidates who might be running in this race. Rebecca Cook is already running and has been running really well. She had a really strong showing in the primary last year, coming in second to Pfaff. And then a number of other candidates brought up, and I'm going to key on Stevens Point State Representative Katrina Shankland, who I kind of had her name circled after last year's midterms. You know, as loyal readers of the Recombobulation Area know, I preview every last race
all
on the map.
Every single one of them.
In the Wisconsin State Legislature, and had previewed Shankland's race because Republicans were trying to flip that seat in the last election cycle, really targeted that, you know, a shifting district in central Wisconsin. The Republicans might be able to pick up a seat. But instead of flipping that seat, they actually went the opposite. Shankland won by a greater margin in 2022 than the margin she won by in 2020. So she won a 15-point victory in a Biden plus 7 district that had been trending to the right. A really, really impressive electoral showing there. And so I kind of had her name set aside. Would she run for higher office? It seems like, you know, somebody who has that kind of success in a district like hers could be picked out as someone who could run a congressional race. So keeping an eye on what happens from Katrina Shankland. The quote from the Journal Sentinel said she was seriously considering a run. So that is a candidate to watch. The others listed in the article were La Crosse County Board Chair Tara Johnson and Missy Hughes, who is currently the CEO of the WEDC, kind of part of Governor Evers' cabinet. So really an interesting race to watch there as we look ahead to the 2024 races. You know, this is probably going to be the most competitive congressional race on the map in the state of Wisconsin next year. And, you know, I think Cook, Shankland, Johnson, Hughes, whoever it might be, it's going to be a really, really important race for maybe National Democrats to actually invest in this time around.
As you noted, that race was significantly closer than most people were expecting coming in. Derek Van Orden with 51.8% to 48.1%. So he only won by about 164 to 152, 12,000 votes.
Yeah, really, really close race. Closer than a lot of people expected. You know, if Van Orden hadn't been outspending PAF the way that he did, you know, maybe that would have made a difference in that race. Like you said, 12,000 votes. And as we've seen in that district, you know, that is a district where a lot of counties went for Janet Protasiewicz in the spring election. A lot of counties, you know, have gone for candidates like Tammy Baldwin in the past. So, you know, definitely something to watch here as the House majority there's a competition for the House majority in the 2024 race.
Yeah, and it's important to note the Wisconsin 3rd Congressional District, one of two competitive congressional districts here in the state of Wisconsin, the third spanning much of western Wisconsin, and the first is the other of those two competitive districts in southeastern Wisconsin, currently represented by Congressman Brian Stile. So it will be something interesting to keep an eye on in western Wisconsin to see candidates continue to see who's going to go up against Van Orden, keeping an eye on southeastern Wisconsin as well to see if there are challengers to Brian Stile. And as you've noted, there's a big question mark on how the state's legislative maps are going to look. I believe the congressional map's going to be not part of the challenges coming before the state Supreme Court, Dan. So do you believe that's going to be kind of where we're going to see candidates announcing and launching now for 2024 is at the congressional level, and see some of these candidates holding off at the state level when it comes to question marks surrounding those legislative maps?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility, but you know, like you said, the challenge that is coming before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, the first on the list of priorities is to address the state legislative maps, which are so unbelievably gerrymandered. So I don't think there hasn't been any filings yet for the congressional maps, and any kind of changes would be on a tight timeline already. But at the same time, I think Stevens Point is a city that, you know, I think has been in different districts over the course of the last few redistricting cycles. So whether that's in the 3rd congressional district, whether that moves into another new district that might be drawn, that has to be, you know, a question for Shankland in particular, being that she's based in Stevens Point. So that's something to consider as well. But I think if there's any changes to any of the maps, it's more likely that it would be at the state legislative level than at the congressional level. But look, if you're listening to this and you're somebody who's active in politics and wants to get engaged, you should start thinking about getting involved in your local level, your county parties, things like that, because there's going to need to be probably more candidates considering running than would be, you know, actually on the ballot, because I think you need to over prepare and contest every race if at all possible, if we do have a situation where there are new maps and every last member of the Wisconsin state legislature would be on the ballot next.
So you're looking for more homework next year when it comes to all of the previews that you do for every single legislative district, because you want candidates filling all of them, running on both sides for all of these new possible districts we may have next year.
That's right. I don't want to write about any uncontested races next year.
There we go.
That's my hope.
Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, really enjoy you joining us on this Wednesday afternoon. Dan, we appreciate you. Follow him on Substack. Become a paid subscriber. Town Call will be back tomorrow at 12:15. We'll talk to y'all then.
Take it easy, party people.
Thanks, guys.
kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.